Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the 220th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com, as well as locally FansFavorite.com. Come on in. Chat room is open. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my ability. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, I got to say that now that this 2014 MLS season is over, now we look ahead to what is going on with, and you have to say it, the CBA, the Collective Bargaining Agreement, because you have to say that the situation here is just absolutely unbelievable. It's just absolutely unreal to see what is going to happen and what will happen as we get ready for a possible future that might be a little bit. And when I say that, you don't know what's going to happen with this collective bargaining agreement. We've seen it many, many times, friends. We've seen it many, many times that it's a situation where you don't know what could happen if, and let's be honest with ourselves, you don't know what could happen if certain things don't go the right way when it comes to these collective bargaining agreements, because we've seen almost crazy stuff happen, whether it's the NBA, whether it's just absolutely crazy enough when certain sides will either lock out the opposition or they'll go forward with the strike. And all I can say is this. We don't know what's going to happen with the players or with the league, because as we all know, this is what's going to happen. And when I'm talking about what's going to happen, is this. There is so much unknown moving forward, talking about just moving forward, finding out what will happen if one side will not like the deal. Orlando City coming in to 2015, New York City FC coming in to 2015. And you know what? Don't know what's going to happen, to be honest. But, you know, we have to trust both sides on how these things are going to happen. We're just going to have to trust what's going to happen. When everything is going to be big for this sport in this country. But I'll say this. I will say this. It will be interesting to see what's going to happen. It will be interesting to see how it's going to happen. And all I know is this, is that if we're going to avoid the same issues that happened last time, and that is, of course, before the 2010 season got underway, it's a situation where I really hope that we don't have to worry about when it comes to this sport falling in the clutches of the situation that we're going to have called, and I'll say it, the possibility of not having a season or having a shortened season, because let's not also forget, we could have that moment. We could have that moment where it's really tough to think about, because obviously there's a Gold Cup coming, CONCACAF Champions League involving DC United and Montreal Impact to finish up the 14-15 edition. And you know what? Who knows? Who knows what's going to be in 2015? Now, you'd like to think that both sides are going to find a way to come together, get together, hammer out a deal. We've all heard about what could happen. We all heard about Don Garber saying could happen if this situation, because MLS is still losing money. Now, obviously, the players are going to want to know about all this situation. They want to know how it's going to come together, what will come together, why it will come together. And the truth of the matter is this. We don't know what's going to happen from now till the first kick, which it will be the first weekend of March of 2015, March 6th, 7th, and 8th. And let's also not forget the new TV deal with both ESPN and Fox Sports. What is going to happen? Right now, I have no inside information to give you. All I can do is give you my hope and my belief that this will happen, that this will come together, and this will happen, that both sides will come together, agree on everything that both sides want, shake hands, and let's have a final good 2015 season with no problems, no hiccups, no nothing. This is where I get nervous when certain things are going forward. This is where I get nervous, because I'll be honest with you, I'm not in the room when they're going to talk to each other. I'm not in the room when both sides are going to hammer out these types of deals. You just hope that they do, and you just hope that the situation will be good for both sides, and it comes away nice and clean and nothing messy whatsoever. That is where I'm coming from, and I really do hope the situation does get solved as quickly as possible with this new collective bargaining agreement between Major League Soccer and the Players Union. Let's hope we can get this done quickly, quietly, and we can worry about who will be fighting spots in 2015 and a solid MLS run for any of these new 20 sides. Ladies and gentlemen, I've got a great show for you tonight. Of course, this will be a two-parter. I had a little issue with constructing this one, but we're going to have on in the second part, if you stay with me for part two, we'll have on Kartik Krishnaiyer, and we'll also have on who we'll be talking about is Kartik Report. And, of course, Jason Iapicco will be helping me out recapping the 2014 MLS season. Also joining me will be Alicia Rodriguez of the Goat Parade. Of course, that site will probably be, will change after when 2017 comes along. And, of course, John Sandati will be joining me to talk as well to talk about the future of Los Angeles FC. But, of course, I'd like to bring back this gentleman who has been on for a very, very long time. Of course, he's a very busy man. He is the creator and the head of Libero Sports Agency, my good friend Eddie Rock. Eddie, thank you for the time and welcome back.
Thanks, Daniel. It's good to be on back with you.
Now, before we discuss this, I understand you have a brand new addition to the family. Congratulations. Mazel tov. I'm very happy.
Thanks very much. Yeah, four-month-old Theo.
That's wonderful. Such wonderful thing to hear about, growing the family, of course. But as we get ready to discuss the situations that have come up, obviously we have the expansion draft and that just happened between both Orlando City and New York City FC. And then, of course, we'll talk about the up-and-coming collective bargaining agreement through negotiations going on between the league and the players' union. First, the expansion draft. As a sports agent, when you find out about your clients currently on a current team, let's just say, for example, Real Salt Lake, and then you're following what's going on between both Orlando City and New York City FC, and you're out of, you know, example, your client gets selected. Now, what happens when your client, who currently plays for, as example, Real Salt Lake, will move now to Orlando? What changes does the agent have to make, or is it all the same?
In the expansion draft, the contract that the player was already under, which again was signed with Major League Soccer and not, for in this example, Real Salt Lake, is essentially transferred from Real Salt Lake to New York City FC. So there's no new negotiation unless that is something that has been maybe broached beforehand, you know, before the player, you know, is selected in the expansion draft. Typically, the work that an agent does in and around this is, you know, once the protected lists are released, you know, there's usually some back channeling between clubs, finding out whether or not, you know, what the player's situation is. You know, is he interested in joining one of the new expansion teams? And, you know, then there's, you know, the talk of, you know, how does a player fit with playing style? And as you saw last week, there are a lot of deals where there could be Team X. You know, for example, Portland wants a player who's on a different roster who's available in the expansion draft. They can use the expansion draft mechanism as a way to facilitate a trade.
Okay. So that sounds pretty good right there. It sounds kind of cut and dry right there at the moment. And, of course, as we discuss more about what goes on, let's just say with obviously, like you know, Orlando's here in Major League Soccer. New York City FC is also with Major League Soccer. Do they have discussions with you about a player who is your client? If there's a philosophy that they want to share with you to tell you why they want your player, or maybe you have more than one player that they want to bring over, do they talk to you about what they are trying to do at their club, or is it just a standard, you're the agent, and we're just going to sign the contract?
It's probably a little bit more towards the standard. It really comes down to contractual issues. You know, there is a little bit of due diligence that's done. However, I mean, you know, a club really only wants to bring in a player who's excited about the challenge of building a new, essentially a new club from scratch. So there is, you know, I think they, most players are, you know, spoken with before before a deal is made. You know, and again, both Orlando and New York, they've been doing work for, you know, really the past year, and Orlando even maybe a little bit longer, you know, preparing for the expansion draft, preparing for the transition from playing in USL Pro to, you know, moving into Major League Soccer. So, you know, a lot of players, obviously, that they scouted were probably protected, you know, and there you will still see a lot of trades that happen in and around the draft as well. So there may be players who were protected or who were, you know, not available at certain prices, you know, before the first of the year, who may change, end up changing teams. You know, all of the coaches and technical directors will be together in Florida for the MLS Combine. And you, there are quite a few trades that are, you know, made very similar to what you would see at the winter meetings in Major League Baseball, for example.
Right. Okay. So that's kind of cut and dry right there. That's not bad, actually. That's pretty good. It sounds like everything is kind of copacetic. Now, here's a bit of a tricky question, I guess. It might not be that tricky, but obviously Orlando City that played in the USL Pro League, which is third division at the moment, they come up through financial promotion to Major League Soccer. What would be the similarities or differences when a club like Orlando City moves from a lower division to MLS? Is it the same or is it different, kind of like what New York City FC is doing? There's just a straight-up expansion side. They're just coming in and adding on to MLS. They've never been in the lower levels of U.S. soccer.
Yeah. Well, I think what Orlando will have, which will give it an advantage, is Adrian Heath has been there you know, since their transition from a USL Pro team in Austin that moved to Orlando. So, you know, there is a clear playing philosophy. Adrian has really, over the past 18 months, you know, put a team together that was geared towards Major League Soccer. You know, there are some of their better players from the Orlando team over the last couple of years actually didn't make the transition with them. And those were players who, you know, I think objectively were very, very good at the USL Pro level and, you know, just maybe weren't seen ready to take the jump with the team. But, you know, what you saw last year is Orlando City used that last year's USL Pro season as an audition for dozens of players. And if you look, they brought in, you know, I think very young, dynamic players, you know, that should help them, you know, in MLS, especially, you know, in the Eastern Division that they're going to have to deal with next year. New York City FC, you know, maybe didn't have quite the opportunity Orlando had with actually playing a, you know, a regular season in playoffs. But as you saw last year, they started to piece together trades with other MLS teams, and they started putting some of those players that they would pick up midseason in on loan, either overseas in Europe or in the NASL. So they were able to, you know, put together five, six guys, you know, all have Major League Soccer experience and were able to loan them out to give them experience. So they at least don't come in, you know, to the situation flat, you know, where Orlando City was able to add seven, eight guys that had some experience playing with them in USL.
That's fantastic. That's awesome to hear. Now, I don't know if you have any clients that play overseas in Europe or in South America. Just out of curiosity, is it a little different over in Europe and in South America when it comes to MLS on how the players' contracts are done and written, or with, I guess, teams that get promoted and relegated? Is there any similarities or differences?
I think the biggest difference, and this is something that's really going to play into the CBA negotiations, is almost all contracts in Europe are guaranteed. Now, you might see an option year, but contracts are guaranteed at the time of signing. And in many cases, they're guaranteed for multiple years for a player with experience who has been well vetted. Whereas with MLS, you know, you have a lot, especially the younger players, the contracts are only guaranteed halfway through the season on July 1st. So a player could theoretically come, go through training camp, be offered a contract, and they could be cut a week later or they could be cut 2 months later. But again, the contracts for new players in the league, unless it's someone of stature, are not guaranteed. And that's really one of the biggest things where I think MLS is not aligned with, you know, what, you know, you consider the top 20 leagues in the world. And obviously MLS has a stated goal of being one of the top five leagues by 2020 or 2024. That being said, I think, you know, providing greater financial stability for players needs to be something that has to be addressed, you know, I think at this CBA and not the next one.
Absolutely. Well, speaking about the collective bargaining agreement, here we go again. This is going to be a huge one, it looks like, between both the league and the players' union. And, you know, back in 2010, it seemed like that agreement, the final ticks of before either a lockout or a strike was about to happen, but we didn't have any worry of that. The league just started without a hitch. Could you talk about that if it does happen that way again, like how close of a call it could be that we could have or have not a season?
Yeah, well, I think last time, maybe to go back, and again, this is my perception of how things mm-hmm. went down in 2010, but I thought in retrospect, I think the union was caught a little flat-footed. You know, there was, you know, this talk of a date, and then MLS came out and announced that they were going to continue operating under the pre-existing agreement that had been in place. And I think, especially on the narrative that was in the media, it definitely took the wind out of the player sails because it put MLS in a position of they're still negotiating and bargaining and they're not going to do anything to stop the league from moving forward.
Right.
I think this time around, I think the union is a lot better organized. I think they've done a good job of educating the players over the past 2.5 years. And it's something that agents and the union have been talking to the players for a long time about was making sure that, you know, the short-term concerns don't cloud ultimately what will be a decision, you know, a yes, no on, you know, what this new CBA should look like. You know, I think last time it came down to the wire, I know an outside mediator and arbitrator was brought in ultimately. And I don't think it was until the players really spoke directly to Don Garber and the other top executives that there was some movement on that final week or the final 10 days. How this one's going to go, it's interesting. I mean, the league obviously has trumpeted the success. You know, the new expansion fees are now well over $100 million. As you referenced earlier, there's a new TV deal in place. And, you know, at the same time, there's, you know, a little of this kind of speaking out of the other side of their mouth where they're saying, well, the teams aren't profitable yet. While at the same time, there's, a huge Forbes article and report that came out last year talking about how some of the clubs have, you know, quadrupled or, you know, even gone up 5-6 times in value over the past 3 to 4 years. So, you know, I think this is, you know, it's a good problem for the league to have. You know, ultimately, they need to be bringing in better players, and those are, you know, foreign international players that are coming over, and they need to do a better job of, you know, rewarding the players, especially the Americans who what I consider are starters in the league. You know, their pay is definitely out of line compared to what you would consider the other top 15 or 20 leagues in the world. And those are the players that really, I think, need to see, you know, amount of recognition in this new collective bargaining agreement.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you there, and we'll see what happens. But on an agent's side of this situation, you know, obviously we always hear about what the players want, what the leagues want, but as an agent for your player being involved in a collective bargaining agreement, what is the agent's job while negotiations are being discussed with this type of a format? What do you have to do? I mean, do you offer assistance to your players that are your clients? Do you offer advice to other players that are not your clients, but at least helping them out with how discussions are going?
In this case, you know, the union is driving, and the MLS Players Union is driving everything. So You know, we are provided, I would say, occasional updates that really don't have any sort of, you know, they're not going to have any meaningful information that could be leaked, you know, to the media. But, you know, we do get updates. We get, you know, updates from different player reps as well. But as far as agents go, they are not involved in the process with the collective bargaining agreement. Yeah. You know, really what I would say is our job was to identify the players that, you know, there is a possibility of a lockout and to make sure that they're prepared, you know, for anywhere between weeks, if not months, of, you know, missing pay. Because if there is a strike, you know, there will be a loss of income for these players.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. So I guess, okay, there goes my next question there, because obviously if there's a strike or a lockout, I mean, if I can ask this question, obviously, like you said, the players' union has everything under control. Do the players' union, if the head of the players' union called you up and asked you for advice, would that be plausible? Would that be accepted? Or you just wouldn't accept, well, not I shouldn't accept, but expect a phone call from the head of the players' union?
I would be honored if Bob Pluth called me up and asked my opinion, but I don't think that call is going to be coming. You know, again, I think the union's done a good job in the last 4 to 5 years of, I think they've shared information with the other major player unions now, but at the same time, you know, that's talk, you know, the last agreement, you know, the last CBA needs to be drastically improved upon. Yeah. You know, the owners have made money. The league is doing very, very well. And the players at the same time need to also share in that revenue and those profits. You know, and I think a good way to kind of put it out there for the general public, or at least those that are, you know, listening tonight and are, you know, devout MLS fans, you know, all of the other pro leagues that we talk about, you know, baseball, basketball, and football, most of the salary cap is based on some sort of revenue or, sports-specific revenue. There isn't even that discussion right now with MLS, because the MLS will not share revenue numbers with the Players Association or the public. So where you see it's, you know, basketball and football, you're usually talking about a split on 50-50 of playing revenue. That's not even on the table right now. So I do think we have a long way to go before we're, you know, the unions have the same type of bargaining power. I should say the MLS players union has the same type of bargaining power that the NFL or the NBA union has.
Absolutely. I guess finally, Eddie, your opinion, because, you know, I do respect your opinion. I do respect how you work within this, this type of job that you do. And obviously you've been very successful at it. In your mind, do you think that there will be a brand new CBA between the players' union and the league, or do you think we could have an issue of either a strike or a lockout that begins the first weekend, the first kick of this league in 2015?
I'll maybe answer your question a little bit roundabout. I think there will be a season.
Sure.
I would be very surprised if there is a long term work stoppage. I also don't think a work stoppage is necessarily a bad thing. You know, I think that, you know, this, you can look at it this two ways. You can look at this as management against players as a, you know, a zero sum game, or you can look at it as where does MLS really want to be? And again, if they want to attract top level players from internationals, from overseas, if they want to really bring or retain the best young players in this country, you know, they are going to have to pay more money. They're going to have to give players more autonomy and more freedom. You know, I think the biggest issue right now is there's very little opportunity for players to really find their market value within the current MLS system. And when I say that is, when a player plays out his MLS contract, he is not free to negotiate with other teams in MLS. His current team will still hold his rights within the league structure. If you know, a team other than his own wanted to sign that player, they would have to trade for those players. They would have to trade for that player's rights. You know, as a result, you know, clubs will say, well, if you don't sign a contract and you're going to run out your contract, we'll have to look to sit you and play other players over the last 6 months. Those are conversations, and that's sometimes things that are, you know, voiced by other clubs. So, you know, they're not giving the players the ability for freedom of movement when they're out of contract is something that I think is really important, and I think will make the league a better league overall. And I think, you know, the other way, and I think when we talk about incentives and how the league is run, right now,
right.
You know, you've got a Byzantine network of rules, some written down, some we find out as we go along. But we are not allowing good or great general managers to flourish because there are so many different ways to, you know, kind of equalize how players are, you know, discovered, distributed, and signed. That I think there's a general agreement that, you know, general managers and technical staffs as well want some ability to, you know, be creative on the way they, you know, put together a roster and, you know, how they pay guys. And, you know, sometimes when a salary is set by a bunch of people sitting in an office in New York City, you know, I don't think is really having, you know, somewhat of a free market, you know, find out what players' value is. And in turn is, I think that also dissuades players internationally from coming here.
Very, very true. Eddie, thank you again for the time. Congratulations on the new edition and continued success for Libro Sports Agency. And I hope to talk to you again soon. Take care now.
Thanks, Daniel. Take care.
No problem at all. That's Eddie Rock from Libro Sports Agency in Chicago, Illinois. This gentleman knows everything what goes on in the business of player acquisition. Joining me now, of course, is Alicia Rodriguez, the head writer and producer of the Goat Parade on SB Nation, which probably will no longer be called the Goat Parade once LAFC comes in 2 years. How are you? How's it going?
It's going pretty well. We haven't decided for sure what we're going to be doing with the name, but yeah, there's probably a rebrand down the line a little ways. I think we're going to stay as the Goat Parade for a little bit longer.
Absolutely. Of course, we're waiting for John Sundotti, of course, one of the members of the supporters groups that did go and support for Chivas USA. Before we talk about LAFC, what was it like in the last day of the season for this club? I mean, obviously a lot of turmoil, maybe a lot of relief. I don't know. I wasn't there. You were there. Of course, John was there as well. What was it like for you when the final 90 minutes ticked off?
Well, obviously it was pretty difficult. I mean, it's an unusual situation. I mean, it's not unique, of course, but it's certainly unusual to have a preset idea that your team is going to be disappearing after that game. And in some respects, that means you get an opportunity to, you know, sort of say goodbye to the team as best you can. And in other ways, it's obviously a very unsatisfying feeling because regardless of the performances and, you know, the results that, at least for this club, were often, you know, not quite up to what I think supporters were hoping for, it was nice to have an opportunity to see them and, you know, at least see that there was some closure, I suppose, to what had happened in the history. And it was obviously weird, I'll put it that way, but we tried to make the best of it, I think.
Absolutely. Obviously, Eric Torres, Kubo Torres, is still, I guess, in the air. The league wants to keep him. Technically, he's still property of Guadalajara in the Liga MX. What is the latest you can tell us? And do you think he might stay?
Yeah, so the deadline was supposed to be yesterday, Monday, for determining whether or not Torres was going to end up back in MLS for next season. And then this afternoon there was a statement released by the league saying that the league and the player and his representatives, and I assume Chivas de Guadalajara, are all still in conversation about what's going to be happening with his future. So to me, it seems pretty likely he'll be coming back to MLS. You know, Chivas is in a lot of trouble right now. They're in a relegation battle. There's a couple teams below them, and it's by no means guaranteed that they're going to be relegated or anything like that. In fact, I think they're probably going to survive, but they're going to probably be around the relegation zone for quite some time to come, at the very least. And, you know, he probably would get playing time there, but it's a very difficult situation. It's obviously a club that's in constant turmoil. And, you know, he's established himself pretty well in MLS. And, you know, there's been some reports out there that he would like to play. He'd either like to stay in LA and play for the Galaxy or possibly go to Seattle. I haven't been able to independently confirm those reports, but mm-hmm. at least on the LA link, it makes, you know, quite a bit of sense because, you know, he already has a home in Los Angeles and he wouldn't have to pick up and move at all. He could, you know, keep his same routines and that sort of thing. So I think it's probably pretty likely he'll end up staying, but I think there's obviously a lot of moving parts as far as money, you know, potential contract terms, a transfer fee, that sort of thing, and probably holding up the process quite a bit at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully he will stay here. If not, obviously, that means he's probably heading back to Guadalajara to try and help them get out of the hole that is being relegated. We'll see what happens. Now, I'm assuming you were at the announcement of the brand new LAFC club led by Mandalay Bay Entertainment. I've never seen, in my honest opinion, I've never seen so many people that wanted to become owners of a club. I mean, forget about the main people. I mean, I expected Mia Hamm, of course, or her husband, Nomar Garcia Parra, fine, you know, that's fine. But Irvin Magic Johnson, you know, Tony Robbins, the expert guru, how he likes to give people positive thoughts and all that stuff. I mean, that is just amazing to see how many people want to be part of this LAFC club as well as being a part of Major League Soccer.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think it speaks to the growing presence of the league and the optimism that it can continue growing, you know, for decades to come. I think with the situation with the owners and having so many of them, to me, it indicates that there's a lot of connections amongst this group. You know, there's a lot of people who work with some of the co-owners in this enterprise or that entity. And, you know, I mean, in the case of Hamm and Garcia Parra, they're married. To my knowledge, there aren't any other spousal, you know, couples in the ownership group. But there seems to be a lot of you know, interconnections between this group. And I think that in many respects that hopefully will help, you know, the growth and building that particular club because these people have expertise levels in various ways. I mean, you know, you bring up Robbins and I think that that's kind of the easy joke is, you know, is he going to be the one giving the, you know, the pregame and halftime pep talks for the team? And, you know, that, I mean, that's kind of comical, but I do think that, the people who have been assembled, I mean, they obviously have money. That seems to be the primary, you know, link uniting them as owners. But I also think that they seem to be successful people who know a lot about their particular fields and, you know, they're in a variety of different kinds of fields. And I think the hope is that that can translate to success with this new MLS team.
Absolutely. Of course, Henry Nguyen is the ownership the head of the ownership group of Mandalay Bay Sports and Entertainment. And have you talked to him? What's he like? I mean, it really sounds he's very genuinely excited to be a part of Major League Soccer. I mean, it's just amazing to see him smiling. I see the picture of him right now. He's like smiling from ear to ear. It's fantastic to see it. How genuine is he really?
Yeah, I haven't actually personally spoken to him at this point, but I've heard audio with him and obviously been reading up on him quite a bit. I mean, he's a young guy. He's been pretty successful. Again, he's pretty well connected in the business world. I mean, it seems like he has tons of enthusiasm, which I think is absolutely necessary to try and make an MLS team successful. I mean, the first hurdle that they're going to have to approach in this process, you know, beyond actually being awarded the team in the first place, is finding a stadium site and building a stadium. And so having as much enthusiasm, not to mention money, resources in various ways, is going to be necessary in order to see that through. And so hopefully, you know, again, he can kind of set the tone for the rest of the group and the rest of the organization in finding that stadium site and securing it and getting, you know, the building process underway and really starting to plunk down roots in the area for this new team.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. And, of course, they are looking for sites to build a brand-new stadium. I understand that when they start off in 2017, they will be at the Olympic Coliseum, I think, where USC would normally play their college football games, the Trojans.
Yeah, so there was a report the day before the official announcement about the team from Taylor Twellman, who is very well-connected. He's been breaking stories, you know, for a solid year, you know, pretty reliably. And he said that the team was going to play their first season, perhaps beyond, at the Coliseum. But on the first day of, you know, the announcement of the team, the main owners walked back from that and they did not make any commitment to, you know, sort of what was going to happen. They said that their priority was going to be to try and get the stadium done in time for that first season. And then in the case, if that was not possible or, you know, if they couldn't complete the process by that time, then they would explore alternate options for a temporary home. But, you know, it may be something that they've already got lined up and they just don't want to make it public because they want to keep, you know, the PR going and want to see if maybe they can turn it around and get a stadium built in time. Or it might be that they're, you know, they truly haven't committed at this point and you know, they really are pushing for 2017 to open the stadium. I mean, that sort of remains to be seen, I suppose, at this point.
I want to go back to the ownership group for a second. Now, apparently, Vincent Tan, who owns Cardiff City in right now, of course, they were relegated to the championship in England. He's also a member of this ownership group. Does that also bring a little more curiosity to who is going to be maybe calling the shots of this ownership group? Will it be Tan? Will it be Mr. Henry Nguyen, who is obviously looking like he is going to be leading this group? Do you think there could be if certain things don't go right, and obviously we're not going to find out till after the 2017 season when they open up, but do you maybe sense a little power struggle the way Vincent Tan runs Cardiff City and the way Henry Nguyen is going to probably run this club?
Well, I think right off the bat, the established order is that the team has three principal owners. You mentioned Nguyen, and then also Peter Guber, who's a Hollywood executive, and he's also a co-owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers, among and then I think a handful of minor league baseball teams as well. And then the third partner is Tom Penn, who you may be familiar with if you're an NBA fan. He's an analyst on ESPN, and he used to be an executive in the league. It seems like they're going to be the three main people calling the shots, and then the rest of the ownership group at this point, you know, based on what little we know at this point, it seems like the rest of them are going to, you know, sort of jump in on projects, you know, lending their expertise when necessary, but not really calling the shots on a day-to-day basis. And I think working more as investors than as active hands-on owners, most likely. And I think you raise an interesting question, and that is something certainly to keep an eye on, is whether or not, you know, if there are any hiccups in the process, if there are any, you know, issues that arise, what's going to happen if there's a conflict or if there are factions between, you know, this giant ownership group, you know, is that going to be an issue? Are there going to be, you know, major differences of opinion that are going to, you know, really hamstring the team? I think it's certainly possible, of course. We're at a very early stage, and, you know, very successful people who have a lot of money don't tend to, you know, simply say, here's my money, do, you know, do what you like with it. But, you know, I think at this point we have to give them the benefit of the doubt to start with and you know, see that if they can have a smooth kind of leadership progression and you know, not really hit those roadblocks with potential issues between different owners within the group.
As I was trying to say before, Alicia, you know, you've got nothing till 2017. I'm a little nervous for you because there's going to be no MLS club to cover. I mean, I know you have a family to take care of, obviously, but I'm concerned for you. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit concerned, too, about what's going to happen on, you know, game days and while the season's in swing and that sort of thing, too. But we'll just kind of roll with it and you know, see what happens. I mean, it's going to be weird not having a team to actively follow next season, but, you know, I'll just kind of roll with it and see what happens.
Probably so. Dare I ask you this question? Will you be on loan during Galaxy games?
certainly not for the Go Parade, no. You know, obviously we'll watch them as much as I watch any other team, and it's convenient nearby because they have a local broadcast station, so I can actually watch their games more easily than any other team. But no, I mean, I'm going to remain a neutral heading into the 2015 season for sure.
Okay. Well, listen, I really do hope that this does go smoothly. I really do hope that the transition will be as smooth as possible. And all I can say is, well, I thank you for covering Chivas USA to the best of your abilities. I know you always, I read sometimes your stuff on the website, and I really do hope that it will be as painless as possible these next 2 years. And hopefully everything will go smoothly when 2017 rolls along. Thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the time and the support.
No problem at all. And listen, anytime you want to help out on this show, you know, you're more than welcome to join in.
Sounds great. Thank you.
No problem at all. It's Alicia Rodriguez of the Go Parade on SB Nation as we talk about LAFC coming in and the demise of Chivas USA, the Chivas brand going back down south of the border to Guadalajara as that unfortunately has failed, even though we have an expansion side once again of the Manchester City team playing in New York City. Of course, the Metro Stars purchased by the Red Bull Energy Drink Corporation, becoming the New York Red Bulls. So obviously it's a little bit of a difference when it's a expansion side, like what Chivas USA was, an expansion side that came in trying to be as strong as possible and at the same time moving on down and moving on forward to see what will happen here as the future keeps on going. And hopefully LAFC will get their soccer stadium built, and we'll see what's going to happen there. Hoping to have on John Sandati to discuss the fans' version or the supporters' side of things, but unfortunately that I guess he was very busy tonight and just could not make it, and that's okay. We'll get John on again another time. But obviously, you know, you wonder what it's like for a guy like him. We've seen the pictures of the black 1850 army, the black army that was supporting Chivas USA. And, of course, it looked like a funeral for the dead and stuff like that. And but you want to know what the supporters feel of things about how they feel going forward with this situation. But obviously, it's a situation that we don't know. It's a situation that obviously, thankfully, I don't have to be a part of, even though I saw it from a distance, and it's really terrible But just to let everyone know, obviously, that hopefully this will never happen again, and we won't have to see the ending of a club leaving Major League Soccer this way. We've had contraction already with Miami and Tampa Bay. We have here a club being bought back and reforming in 2 years to be with Atlanta in 2017. We have some time left. Once again, there was a timing snafu, meaning the length of the of this show being broadcasted on the live stream. So there will be a part two at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So please just refresh when everything is I'll probably close it down for 3-4 minutes left of this current show, just so we can get ready and get set up for part two with Carter Krishnayer and, of course, Jason Iapico from the Red Bull Rant podcast, as well as once the Metro SB Nation site. So once again, the situation is this, is we will get that thing underway at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. So don't worry, I'm still here. We're just going to close up shop on the first hour quickly, and then we'll get ready for the second hour, 1, 2, 3, and we won't have to worry about these things. But finally, before we do that, CONCACAF has officially brought out the dates for the group stages of the 2015 Gold Cup, and currently the home side, the USA, already we know will be head of Group A. Costa Rica will be head of Group B, and Mexico will be the head of Group C. We will await for the full schedule, including the knockout stages. Right now, here are the dates and locations. July 7th in Dallas, Frisco, Texas at Toyota Stadium. That's a Group A. Also in Group A on July the 10th in the Boston, Foxborough area, Gillette Stadium. And then the third match of Group A will be on July the 13th at Sporting Park in Kansas City, Kansas. Group B, at the StubHub Center in Carson, California on July the 8th. Houston, July the 11th at BBVA Compass Stadium. And then up in Toronto at BMO Field on July 14th for Group B. For Group C, Soldier Field in Chicago, July the 9th. Phoenix at University of Phoenix Stadium in Phoenix, Arizona on July the 12th, and then July 15th down in Charlotte, North Carolina at the Bank of America Stadium. At the moment, these are the four stadiums that will be drawn for the possibility of hosting either the final itself, the semifinals, and the quarterfinals, and it will be at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, Georgia, M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore, Maryland, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey in the New York City area, and Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And here are, once again, the qualified teams with the automatic qualifiers of the North Zone, Canada, Mexico, and the United States. For the people that have won in the Copa Centroamericana, the UNCAP Central American countries, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Panama, El Salvador, in the Caribbean Cup in 2014, Jamaica the winner, Trinidad and Tobago the runner-up, Haiti in third place, Cuba in fourth place, and there will be a play-in for the fifth-place team between French Guiana of the Caribbean facing off against Honduras, fifth place of the UNCAF, and that matches, those matches, first leg will be on March 25th in French Guiana, and then Honduras will host the second leg on March 29th. So get ready for the 2015 Gold Cup. It should be fun. It should be exciting. I cannot wait for it. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. I'm ready for it. It's going to be fantastic. And I know you guys can't wait for it either. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Now, once again, don't forget, there's an issuing of timing of the amount of time of broadcast here. I've already set up the second hour, getting ready for both Carter Krishnayer and Jason Iapico. They'll be joining me at the 9 o'clock hour. You don't have to worry about another intro music. I've killed off the music. So we're going to get ready. We're going to have some fun. And don't worry, you guys are going to have fun. It's going to be great. I cannot wait for this. It's going to be awesome to have both gentlemen on, because you want to hear what's going on here. And once again, it's blogtalkradio.com/Four Years Teams Fire. Please refresh the page link on the address bar, and we will be able to get ready and have some fun, and we'll talk some more in the second hour with both Carter Krishnire as well as Jason Iapico. It's going to help me recap the 2014 New York Red Bull season here on the Four Years Teams Fire American Soccer Show. So stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to end it right now, the first hour, and then we're going to get ready for the second hour, and we're going to have some more fun. All right? So here we go. Thank you for listening to the first hour, and get ready for the second hour. Signing off right now. Thank you, everybody.